Osho, The Hidden Harmony, Talks on Heraclitus, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 9.
Bhagwan, Heraclitus said, this universe, which is the same for all, has not been made by any god or man, but it always been, is, and will be an ever-living fire, kindling itself by regular measures and going out by regular measures. The phases of fire are craving and satiety. The sun is new each day.
There is no God as a separate creator of the world and cannot be, because the creation, the creator and the creativity are the same. They are not separate. Existence is one. Then how the creator and the created can be separate? Existence itself is divine. There is no creator who is creating it. It itself is the creator. It itself is the creativity. Heraclitus is a non-dualist. All those who have known are bound to know that duality exists because of the mind. Because the mind cannot see the one. It can only see the two. The moment it perceives anything, it divides. With the mind, the other is necessary. If it sees creation, immediately it thinks of the creator. Because how a creation is possible without a creator? But if with this mind you encounter the creator, then only the mind will see that there must be some other creator, otherwise how this creator can be? Mind is an infinite regress. It goes on and on dividing. That's why mind never reaches any conclusive state. Philosophy believes in the mind. That's why philosophy also never reaches any conclusion. One has to look the totality without bringing mind in, because mind is the factor of duality. It divides. Division is the nature of mind. If you say day, then the mind brings immediately night. Because how the day can be without night? If you say love, then the mind brings hate. How love can be without hate? If you bring life, the mind brings death. How life can be without death? But life and death are one phenomena, one energy. Life is manifestation of that energy. And death is again relaxation. Life is coming to a form, and death is moving again into the formless. The end and the beginning meet. Life is not separate from death. Death is not separate from life. They meet and mingle. Even to say they meet is not right, because the mind immediately brings, if there is a meeting, then there must be two. It is not a meeting. It is one phenomenon. Heraclitus says, desire and satiety. These are the two. You feel hunger, and then you eat, and then you feel satisfied. Have you ever observed that the hunger and the satiety are one? They have to be one. Because the same thing, food, changes both. Food becomes a bridge between hunger and satiety, desire and desirelessness. If they are really separate, then they cannot be bridged. If they are really different, then there is no possibility of any bridge. Then hunger will remain hunger and satiety will remain satiety. Where they will meet and how they will meet, but they meet. Mind thinks hunger is against satiety. Just try to understand it. Move a little deeper into it. Mind says hunger is different from satiety. But when you are satisfied, again, a circle has started which will bring hunger. And when you are hungry, a circle has started which will bring satiety. Are they two? Are just one phenomena? When you eat, hunger disappears. But the moment hunger disappears, a new circle starts. A new morning is the beginning of the evening. A new birth is the beginning of death. But you cannot see so far away. Every morning you become hungry and you eat and you become satisfied. And evening you are again hungry and then you eat and you are satiated. You achieve satiety. But you never see that they both are one. One helps another to bring. If you are never hungry, can you be satisfied? Is there any possibility of satiety if you are never hungry? If you are never hungry, don't think that you will be in a state of satiety. The satiety cannot come without hunger. If there is no morning, don't think that there will be evening always and always. There will be no evening at all. And if there is no death, don't think that there will be life eternal. There will be no life at all. Because death creates the situation, sets a energy phenomena. Every life brings death, every death brings life again. These two appear two to the mind, because the mind cannot see through opposites. When you don't see from the mind, from the logical standpoint, you simply look into the phenomena itself, the totality of it, the two disappears and only one remains. That is the thing with God as creator and universe as creation. Not only ordinary persons are deceived by the mind, great theologians, they are also deceived by it. They also say God created the world. This statement is juvenile. It is childish. nobody has created existence. It is simply there. Because if you bring creation, then millions of problems arise. And that's why theology brings more problems and no solution. And they create a theory, a hypothesis to solve many problems. Nothing is solved. On the contrary, around the hypothesis, new questions arise. They try to solve the problem of existence by bringing God in, that God created. Then they have created millions of problems and they have not been able to solve them. Once you start on a wrong line, you will go on missing, because one thing leads to another. And there is a relatedness. If one thing is wrong, then it will lead to another wrong proposition. Unless you start from the very beginning towards the truth, you will never reach, because the beginning is the end. Theology brings God to solve few problems, because there are problems. Who created the world? The curiosity arises. Such a beautiful phenomena. Who created it? And then the mind has a itching sensation. It should be answered. Who created? But the first thing is to ask whether the question is right. Never raise a question without asking first, is the question relevant? And what is the criterion of a question being relevant? The criterion is that if a question is such that whatsoever answer is given, the same question can be raised again, then the question is irrelevant, it is not right. You ask, who created the world? Somebody says, God. You can ask the same question again, who created God? The question has not changed, not a bit. The same question is still relevant. So somebody says, God A created the world, and then you ask, who created God A? He says, God B created the God A. Then you ask, who created God B? And he says, God C created the God B. But the question remains the same. So all answers are false. If the question is not changing a little bit, then you are not progressing towards truth at all. And if all the answers to a question are false, then please meditate upon the question again. In the very base, the question itself must be wrong. Otherwise, how all the answers can be wrong? At least one answer must be true. But no answer has proved to be true. Hindus, Mormons, Christians, they all have provided answers. But the question remains. Thousands of years working on the question, who created the world, and not a single answer has been given which satisfies. This means that in the very base, from the very beginning, you have taken a wrong line of research, a wrong attitude from the very beginning. So the first thing to ask about a question is to question the question itself, whether it is relevant. This question is irrelevant, who created the existence, for many reasons. Because then the question is possible, why he created? What was the need? Why cannot he live without creating it? What desire possessed him? And when God created this universe, then why there is so much misery, suffering? Suffering which cannot be accounted for. A child is born crippled, blind, ill. Why? If God is the creator, can't he correct the pattern of the world? Or is your God a little neurotic, enjoys suffering, a sadist, enjoys this torture, millions of people dying in a war, being killed, thrown into fire and gas chambers, and he is the creator, and he is simply not worried. He cannot even stop a Hitler to kill millions of Jews unnecessarily, for no reason at all. What type of creator is this? If God creates the world, then he must be a devil, because the world doesn't seem so good. It cannot come out of good. Seems to be inconsistent with good. And God means the good. And this world doesn't show any sign of goodness. Exploitation, violence, war, killing, misery, anguish, tension, madness. For what this creation has been created? And if a God is responsible, then he is the greatest criminal. And these problems arise, and theologians cannot solve them. Then they have to create more false theories, then say there is a devil also, and it is the work of the devil. But they get into their own trap. First they create God, that God created the world, then they have to create a devil, because they cannot explain the world through goodness. The world looks so evil, they have to create a devil. Then the question arises, who created devil? Then they go on and on, and they get into such a desert-like effort which leads nowhere. Nobody reads their big volumes on theology, nobody. Because if you start, you reach nowhere, and they go on and on and on. It seems like a broken gramophone record. The same they go on repeating. And you go on asking the same question, and they go on roundabout. Beating around the bush is all that theology is. Not a single problem has been solved. The most useless effort that man has made ever is theology. And it starts with that God created the world. Men like Heraclitus, Gautam Buddha, Lao Tse, Zarathustra, they don't talk about these things. They simply say, existence is God. Nobody has created it. There is no creator who is responsible for it. So don't raise unnecessary questions, and don't waste your time in unnecessary answering. Existence is. And God is not separate from it. God is existence, the totality. Not a separate being, a person. The totality. It comes out of its own and dissolves. Says Heraclitus, it is fire. Fire is a beautiful symbol. It gives you a very dynamic energy, indicates that existence is a dynamic dialectical energy. It moves on its own. When you say energy, it means something. When you say God, you have moved into something which will not lead it anywhere. Energy is truth. You can feel it here and now. You are energy. The birds singing in the trees are energy. The trees going towards the sky are energy. The stars moving, the sun rising every day, everything is energy. And energy is neither good nor bad. Energy is always neutral. So no need to create a devil. No need to explain anything. Energy is neutral. If you are miserable, it is because of you, not because of a god or because of a devil. If you are miserable, you are behaving with the energy in a wrong way. You will be happy and blissful if you move with the energy. If you move against it, it is you who are responsible. Remember, if there is no God, then you are responsible for whatsoever happens. And if you are responsible, then there is a possibility to transform. If God is responsible, then how one is going to transform? God seems to be a trick of the mind to throw responsibility on somebody else, because the mind is always throwing responsibility on somebody else. Whatsoever happens, you always throw responsibility on somebody else. If you are angry, then somebody has insulted. He has created anger. If you are sad, somebody is making you sad and unhappy. If you are frustrated, somebody is blocking your way. Always somebody is responsible, never you. This is the attitude of the mind, to make somebody else responsible. Then you are freed of the responsibility. But this is why you are miserable. Responsibility is yours. And if you take it as yours, you can do something about it. If it is somebody else, what you can do? If others create sadness, then you will always remain sad, because what you can do about it? Millions of others all are around. If others make you frustrated, then nothing can be done. You will remain frustrated. Then this is your destiny. Because how can you change others? You are responsible. Immediately you become a master. Now you can do something. You can change yourself. You can change your attitudes. You can look through different attitudes towards the world, and you can feel that if you feel miserable somewhere, you are an unfit in the total energy system. That's all what a sin means. You are an unfit. Not knowing how to move this total energy system. And the energy system is neutral. If you follow it, you will be happy. If you don't follow it, you will be miserable. This is the logos, the rita, the tao. For example, if you are feeling thirsty and you don't drink water, you will be miserable. Because in this energy system, water gives you satiety. The thirst disappears. If you are feeling cold, you move near fire. Because in this energy system, fire is the source of all warmth, heat. But when you feel cold, you move away from fire, then you will be miserable. Nobody is responsible. When you are feeling thirsty, hot, you move near fire, you will be in hell. I have heard that a man, a great sinner, died. Everybody knew that he is going to hell. It was so certain. It was obvious. There is no question about it. And when the procession, because he was a great sinner but a very great leader also, a very rich man, because sin has many successes. It pays in this world. So thousands were following. Everybody fully alert that this man is going to hell. But still, this man was very powerful. When the procession was going towards the symmetry. A truck loaded with coal by accident came on the road and started following the procession. The truck was going on its own way, but it coincided. Mulla Nasruddin exclaimed, who was in the procession, that I was absolutely certain that this man is going to hell, but I could never imagine that he has to provide his own coal. Hell is hot fire, but I tell you, you are providing your own coal. This is how things are. If you move against nature, you will be in misery. Misery means moving against nature, and misery is a good indication, if you understand. That shows somewhere you are going wrong, that's all. Put things right. Misery is a help. Anguish, anxiety, tension is an indication that somewhere something is going wrong. You are not with the total. Somewhere you have started your own private movement, and then you will be in misery. Says Heraclitus, private intelligence is false. Intelligence is with the whole. Don't be too clever. You cannot be intelligent on your own. If you move with the existence, you will be intelligent. You will have a clarity of perception. You will be wise. If you move on your own, you will be a fool. An idiot is a person who is completely closed in himself, caved in. He has no contact with the total energy system. That is his idiocy. And a wise man is one who is not closed at all. The air flows through him. The cosmos flows through him. He has no barriers and no doors closed. He has no privacy of his being. He is porous. And whenever he feels miserable, immediately he puts himself right. Immediately he takes the indication. It is a symptom. It is just like illness. When you are not behaving with your body naturally, some illness erupts. That illness is a friend. It shows, behave. Change your ways. You are going somewhere against nature. If you don't take food for 3-4 days, you feel dizzy. You feel hungry. You feel sad. The whole body is saying to you, take food. Because the body needs energy. Always remember, the energy is natural, so the whole quality of your being depends on you. You can be happy, you can be unhappy. It is up to you. Nobody else is responsible. When you feel hungry, eat. When you feel thirsty, drink. When you feel sleepy, go to sleep. Don't force nature. For a little while you can force, because that much freedom is there. If you want to fast, you can fast for a few days. But every day you will become weaker and weaker and weaker. And every day you will be in more and more misery. If you don't want to breathe, for a few seconds you can stop breathing. But only for a few seconds. That much freedom is possible. But that's not very much. And soon you will feel a choking, dying sensation if you don't breathe well. All misery exists to indicate you that you have gone somewhere wrong. You have gone off track. Come back immediately. If you start listening to the body, listening to nature, listening to your inner being, you will be more and more happy. Become a good listener to nature. Listen to the logos. Listen to those who have been awakened to logos, and you will find them always, always natural. They don't force anything. They don't push the river. They simply flow with it. And that is their blissfulness. There is no God who is responsible. We create God out of our own fear and necessity and need. We feel so helpless in our misery, so powerless, so impotent in our pain, that we create out of this fear a God to whom we can pray, to whom we can say that don't give me so much trouble, to whom we can praise and feel that if we praise Him, He will become more and more favorable to us. Do you think God can become prejudiced? If you pray, do you think He will be on your side? If you don't pray, then He will not be on your side. One small child was being told by his parents that if you don't behave well, God will punish you. The child was always put right in the past whenever he was not behaving well or doing something which the parents thought is not good. They had used this trick that God will punish you. He will be angry. And this had always helped. But this time the child laughed and said, I am not worried about God because He does not know me at all. They said, this is something new. You never said this before. How you came to know that He doesn't know you? The child says, for 2 weeks I have not prayed and nothing has happened. So either they think I am dead or they have completely forgotten me. So now no need to be worried about it. Now I am free. Otherwise 2 weeks, no indication. We have created God out of our need. God has not created you. You have created God. It is your need because you are helpless. And then you project everything that you miss on Him. If you are powerless, you say He is omnipotent. If you are ignorant, you say He is all-knowing. If you are blind and move and grope in darkness, you say He is omniscient. This is the trick of the mind. Whatsoever you miss in yourself, you project on Him. And then you think balance is recovered. Now I can pray this omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent being and He will be helping me. These are tricks. You can be helped only by yourself. Of course, nature will be with you if you are with nature. No other prayer will do. This is the only prayer. To me, prayer is a feeling of flowing with nature. If you want to talk, talk. But remember, your talk is not going to affect the existence. It will affect you. And that may be good. Prayer is not going to change God's mind. It may change you. And if it is not changing you, then it is a trick. You can go on praying for years, and if it doesn't change you, drop it. Throw it. It is rubbish. Don't carry it anymore. Prayer is not going to change God. You always think that if you pray, God's mind will change. He will be more favorable. He will be tipped a little towards your side. there is nobody who is listening to you. This vast sky cannot listen. This vast sky can be with you if you are with it. There is no other way to pray. I also suggest to pray, but praying should be just an energy phenomena, not a devotee and God phenomena, but an energy phenomena. You simply become silent. You simply open yourself. You raise your both hands towards the sky. You just feel existence flowing in you. You live. Then you lean down on the earth. You kiss the earth. You feel again a flowing with the earth. Earth and heaven, above and below. You float. You mix. You drop yourself completely. You are not. You become one, merge. This merging with energy is prayer. It changes you. But when you change, the whole existence changes, because with your attitude, whole existence changes for you. Not that the existence is changing, the existence remains the same. But now you are flowing with it. There is no antagonism. There is no fight. No struggle. You are surrendered to it. Otherwise, all things are tricks and man goes on inventing. I have heard once it happened. A rabbi came to a village on his horse. He was very tired. He was going to some other town. He wanted a little rest. So he went into the inn, left his horse under a tree outside with some hay for the horse to eat and rest also. Mulla Nasruddin was sitting under another tree, drunk. The horse was beautiful. He came near just to watch. When he was standing near the horse, a man passed. A man who was a businessman, who was dealing in horses. The horse was a rare thing, really beautiful. He asked Nasruddin, "Is it your horse?" Drunk, and then feeling very good that such a beautiful horse belongs to me, he says, "Yes. But one thing leads to another." That man asks, "I would like to purchase it. How much you would like to take for this horse?" Now, Nasruddin is caught. He simply asked an impossible price, so there will be no problem. He said, 2,000 rupees. The horse was not more than 500 rupees. So nobody is going to pay 2,000 rupees. So simply the matter will be settled. But it happened, the man said, "Okay, take these 2,000 rupees. Then he was in a trouble, but 2,000 rupees. And then he thought the rabbi is inside and he doesn't know why. Why not take these 2,000 rupees, and there is nobody seeing and there is no problem at all involved. So he said, "Okay." He took 2,000 rupees. The businessman took the horse. The moment the horse was gone, the rabbi came out. Nasruddin was in a puzzle what to do now with 2,000 rupees. And he was so drunk, he could not even run away. Then he started working out inside the mind. He found out a solution. He leaned down on his fore as if he is a horse. Put some hay in his mouth. The rabbi couldn't believe what has happened. He said, "What you are doing? Are you mad?" Nasruddin said, "First listen to my story." Now his mind is working fast. He has become a theologian. Now he is working one answer, then another question, then he has got into his own trap. He said, 20 years before, I was a young man and I committed a sin with a woman. And what God did, He was so angry, He punished me and made a harsh, your harsh rabbi. And for 20 years I served you. But it seems now the punishment is over. And I am again restored to be a man. The rabbi himself started trembling, seeing that a sinner has been punished. And who is not a sinner? The rabbi himself has sinned with many women. So he started trembling, seeing this phenomena. He fell on his knees. He started praying. But then there was a practical problem to be solved. He said, it's okay, but I have to go to the other town. So what to do? Nasruddin suggested the market is not very far. You can go and find a horse. So the rabbi went to the market, and there his own horse was standing at the horse dealer's. He started trembling again. He went near the horse, near the ear, and said, what, Nasruddin? So soon again? Mind goes on and on, playing tricks, creating a god, then praying, then being punished, then being sent into hell and heaven, and the whole thing is just imagination. There is no God, no hell, no heaven. Only you are there, and the existence, the energy, the infinite energy. If you are with it, it is with you. This is the state of a Buddha, a Heraclitus. Totally with the total. Then there is no problem. Then one is not really there to create problem. Then there is bliss. When you are not, then there is bliss. Otherwise, if you are fighting against it, moving away from it, doing things on your own, your private intelligence, behaving like an island, then you will be in trouble. Then whatsoever explanations you create and rationalizations are futile. Just imagination. All your churches, temples and mosques stand on men's fertile imagination. All your gods and statues and all your prayers, they are creations of your imagination. And you have created them because you are miserable. And this won't help. Your temples, mosques, churches, no. Your popes and priests and rabbis, no. They can't help. They are exploiting your imagination. And it is a good business. You have to drop imagining. And you have to feel that misery comes when you are out of step with nature. And happiness comes when you are not out of step. Hell is being out of step with Logos. Heaven is being in step with the Logos. And that is the hidden harmony. If you can find, you become blissful. If you cannot find, you are miserable. Nobody else is responsible. You have to find and seek. There is no God, but everybody is divine. The whole existence is divine, godly, but there is no God. So don't waste your time and don't look upwards for somebody to help you. The help will come, but there is nobody to give it to you. You have to take it. But this seems to be arduous, difficult, because then you have to change yourself. To be in step with nature, you will need a radical transformation. To avoid that radical transformation, you create everything, every type of explanation. Now, try to enter these beautiful lines. This universe, which is the same for all, has not been made by any god or man, but it always has been, is, and will be an ever-living fire, kindling itself by regular measures and going out by regular measures. Evolution and involution. Things coming to a peak, then disappearing in a valley. The waves rising to touch the sky, and then moving back to the depth of the ocean. In regular measures, says Heraclitus, the world is energy. Existence is fire. In regular measures it manifests itself, and then unmanifests itself. Just like day and night, in the day you work, awake, and in the night you rest. So there are periods when existence is in the day, and then there are periods when the existence moves into night. Creation and uncreation. Evolution and involution. Day and night. Summer and winter. Life and death. This is a creation period. Soon there will be a decreation period. Hindus call that pralaya, when everything disappears. Hindus have a beautiful theory for it. Heraclitus would have nodded assent. Hindus say that the Brahma, the creator, has his own day, 24-hour day and 24-hour circle, 12-hour day and 12-hour night. His 12-hour day is our creation. Millions and millions of years, ions and ions of time. Then comes the night of Brahma. Then everything disappears. It sleeps, rests, tired, of course, to rejuvenate itself, to come back. It goes into non-existence. Existence is the day, non-existence is the night, in a regular measure. The same time, existence disappears, energy rests. When it has rested, again the day comes, the sun rises, things appear again, everything starts again. It is a circle. Half the circle is of manifestation and half is unmanifestation. Just like a tree grows and grows and grows and then it dies. But it does not die completely. It collects itself into seeds, becomes unmanifest, moves into the subtle. Seeds fall down on the ground, the tree disappears. But in the right season, the seeds will sprout again, and the whole tree will be there again. And it happens not because there is some controller, a god or a man or somebody. There is nobody. Energy itself is enough. It needs no control. It needs nobody to be there. Energy has its own intrinsic discipline. And this seems to be exactly right, because if you watch, you will feel this is how it happens. You feel hungry. You take food, hunger disappears. Where the hunger has gone? It has become unmanifest, moved to the seeds, to the subtle, not on the periphery it has gone to the center again. Then after few hours you feel hungry again. The hunger has come back. You take food, hunger disappears. Where it goes? If it disappears completely, then it cannot come back. It comes again and again and again. It goes again and again and again in the same measure. In the day you are awake, where the sleep has gone, it has moved to the seeds, become subtle. It is there inside you, watching for the right time to manifest. Then by the night it again manifests. Then where your day disappears, have you ever observed? While asleep, where has gone the whole world of the day? The market, the politics, the identity, everything disappears. You have gone to the seats. But in the morning, the sun rises and you rise again. From where you come? From the unmanifest to the manifest again. It is a centrifugal and centripetal movement. The lotus closes and the lotus opens in a regular measure. And this is an energy phenomenon. No personality in it. It is impersonal. Impersonal, it is beautiful. If it is personal, then it will become ugly. And all religions have become ugly because they make it personal. They create a person in it. That person is a just imaginary phenomenon you have created. That's why thousands of gods exist. And everybody has his own notion about God. And when you have a notion about God, others' notions look wrong. Then there is conflict, argument. And your notion of God cannot be right, because you are not right. A person who is right needs no God. Look, Buddha, Heraclitus, they don't need any God. H.G. Wells has written about Buddha that Buddha is the most godless man and yet most godly. Can you find a man more godly than Buddha and more godless? He never talks about God. Because he doesn't project. He has no fear inside to create a projection. He is fearless, then God disappears. Your fear is the cause. And when God disappears, then this whole existence is for you to enjoy and celebrate. Energy is delight. Black has said, energy is delight. When there is no God, you are free, totally free. With a God up there manipulating, you can never be free. You can only be puppets. And all the threads are in his hand. All religious people become puppets. Because for everything someone else is responsible. A really religious person is totally free. Religiousness is freedom. And with God there can be no freedom. How can there be freedom if there is a creator? Because any moment he can change his mind and he seems to be a little crazy. Any moment he can change his mind and say, okay, disappears. Just like as it is said in the Bible, he said, let there be light, and light was born. Any moment he can say, let there be no light, then what? Light disappears. Then you are simply puppets. Then it seems that he is playing chess and you are just on the chessboard. So whatsoever he wants to make of you, he makes. the whole thing looks ugly. If there is no freedom, there cannot be any consciousness, because consciousness grows with more freedom. And the total freedom is possible only if there is no person controlling, manipulating, no boss in existence. Only then there is freedom. But freedom makes you afraid. You don't want to be free. You want to be slaves. That's why you create God. And if there is no God, for example, that communist tried a religion without a God. But man is so afraid, he cannot live without gods. So communism has created its own gods. Lenin has become a god. Now they worship. Now Lenin is no ordinary mortal, he is a god. You cannot escape because you are afraid. Only a man who is totally unafraid, fearless, one who has come to terms with existence, one who has understood that to be with existence and to flow with it is to be blissful, can live without God, can live without any person being projected on existence, can live without imagination, can live with truth. It is hard to live with truth. It is very easy to live with lies. That's why you create lies around you. 99% things around you are lies, but you feel cozy with them, in comfort. They are comfortable lies. Truth is uncomfortable because it needs a radical change. And this is the most radical change that can happen to a man, that he lives without God. And if you can live without God, you become a God. You become godly. If you go on imagining a God, you remain a slave with a boss overhead. You will be a slave. When the boss is no more there, you yourself have become a God. I tell you, there is no God, but everybody is God. Everything is godly. There is no person controlling, because then the whole existence will be ugly, a slavery, a great concentration camp. It will be a prison. No God, life is a freedom. And then you can choose. If you want to be miserable, that's your choice. If you want to be happy, that is your choice. If you feel happy with being miserable, it's okay. There are people who feel very, very happy in being miserable, because through their misery they attract compassion. Through their misery they ask for sympathy. Through their misery they are begging for love. But who can love a miserable person? Unless one is a Buddha, it is impossible to love any miserable person. You are on a suicidal path. If you are asking love through being miserable, you can get a little sympathy, but not love. And that little sympathy will be given to you very grudgingly. Because who is ready to give love to a miserable person? And he himself is in the need. He himself is miserable. That's why people talk too much about their miseries. Listen to their talk. 99% they talk about miseries. And they magnify their miseries. They make them look as great as possible. It is not possible, because you are so tiny. You cannot carry so big miseries. But you are asking for sympathy. And man is afraid of freedom. There is a deep-rooted fear of freedom, because with freedom comes insecurity. With freedom comes the unknown. With freedom you don't know beforehand what is going to happen. With a God and a destiny, everything is certain. You can go to the palmist and he can tell about your future, and you can ask the astrologer. With no God there, there is no destiny, and the astrologers are useless. Nothing can be said about the future. Future remains an open situation. Nothing fixed. Everything flexible and fluid. With freedom you become a fluidity. With God there bossing you, you are secure. Somebody is looking after you, and he knows better what to do and what not to do. In this sense, Heraclitus inside is deeper than Jesus. In this sense, Heraclitus comes better than Jesus or Muhammad. His insight is exactly as deep as Zarathustra, Buddha, Mahavir. Because Jesus goes on speaking and talking in terms of God, creation, Father, Son. Maybe because of the juvenile attitude of the Jews. Maybe because of the people around him. He has to talk in those terms. But Heraclitus doesn't bother about you. He exactly says what is true. He doesn't bother whether you will be able to understand or not. He simply states the truth. If you want to understand, you have to grow. He will not come down to you, you will have to go to him. And this is exactly my attitude also. I will say exactly what I feel. If you want to understand me, you have to grow towards me. I am not going to come down to talk to you on your terms, because that never helps. Because of that, Jesus missed the whole thing. And the Christianity was born, which is nothing but a new edition of Jewish religion. Nothing new. Jews, a little modified here and there. Nothing new. Because Jesus used the whole Jewish terminology. How can you create a new world out of the old? He compromised. Because Jesus had never thought that there is going to be a new religion. He remained a Jew, he died a Jew. He was never a Christian, and he even never could imagine that there is going to be something new. He lived in the fold. And he used past rotten words. That's why the ugly face of Christianity. Heraclitus is absolutely fresh. That's why a Greek mind couldn't understand him at all, because he has no roots in the past. When I am dead, where you will put me? In India you will not find any roots for me. I am a born Jain, but you will not find any roots in Jainism for me. Simply, you cannot find any roots. If you exactly say what you have understood, what you have realized, then there are no roots, because truth has no roots in society. It has roots in existence, but not in society. That's why a man like Heraclitus becomes puzzling. And even a genius like Aristotle says that this Heraclitus is absurd, and he creates puzzles. And philosophy is to solve something, not to create puzzles. He is not creating any puzzle. He looks puzzling because he is stating a fresh phenomena that he has come to encounter. He is not using old, used, second-hand terms for it. Says he, this universe which is the same for all has not been made by any god or man, but it always has been, is, and will be as ever a living fire, kindling itself by regular measures and going out by regular measures. This energy has its own intrinsic system. It is a cosmos, not a chaos, and without a boss. Energy plus freedom, and yet there is a discipline, and that discipline is the inner harmony, the hidden harmony. No boss, and yet there is no chaos. Nobody managing, and yet everything is managed so beautifully you cannot improve upon it. This is the hidden harmony. If there is a manager and he manages, you should be certain that things will go wrong here and there. It is so beautiful and a cosmos because there is no manager in it. This will be difficult to understand. Religious people say, how this world can become a cosmos if there is nobody who controls? Without a controller, everything will fall apart. But Heraclitus will say, exactly, precisely because there is no controller, things cannot fall apart. When you control, you mismanage. You cannot find greater mismanagers than managers. They mismanage. That's what Laozi says. He says, when there were no rulers, everything was beautiful. When there was no law, there was no crime. And when there was no wise man, there were no fools. Things moved in their cosmic beauty. Then entered the rulers. They said rules are needed. With rules entered misrule, because the opposite is always there. Then came wise men, and they said man must be disciplined, and then man became rebellious, and everything went wrong. Then laws came, laws and more laws, and man became more and more criminal. This is what Heraclitus says. He says precisely because there is nobody to control, how things can go out of control. Energy itself has an intrinsic, an inner guide. And listen to this for your life also. If you are guided by your inner insight, if you can listen to your heart, there will be no need for any discipline. You can move completely in trust. Everything will be good. But because you cannot listen to your own heart, you have to listen to many manipulators who go on manipulating. They say, do this. And they say, so many do this, don't do this, that you are confused. You don't know what to do. One religion teaches one thing, another thing. One morality says this is moral, another morality says this is immoral. You are simply confused, and you cannot find your own heart from where the intrinsic, the natural, the spontaneous guide comes. The more you are taught, the more confused you have become. Heraclitus says everything moves by inner harmony. Who is controlling these trees? Who teaches them that now it is the right time to bring your flowers? Who says to the clouds that now time is reaching near and you have to shower and you have to bring rains? nobody. Remember, if there is somebody, then things will go wrong, because how such a vast thing can be managed? Even he is a god, either he will crack down. Just think of the immensity of things, the tremendousness of things, the vastness of things. Either God would have already cracked down long before, gone mad, disappeared simply from the world, or the world will fall down. It can remain a cosmos only because the harmony is not being forced from above, but the harmony grows from within. There are two types of discipline. One discipline that is forced from without. Somebody says, do this. Another discipline that comes from within. You feel what will be natural. You feel where your being is flowing, and you move with your feeling. Then an inner discipline comes in. Outer discipline is a deception, and that creates confusion and a rift in you, because then the inner and outer are opposed. They become antagonistic. Just a few days before, a man came to me and he said, as all religious people will agree with him, he said that I again and again become a victim of outer things, and again I forget the inner. So I asked him, "You please give me a concrete example, what do you mean?" He said, "For example, my inner knows that I should remain faithful to my wife, but again and again I fall in love with other women. So I had to tell him that you seem to be confused. You don't know which is inner and which is outer. The wife is the outer, and you think that is the inner. Do you love your wife?" He said, "Of course not. If I have been in love, why should I fall? Then the wife is the outer, forced by the society, forced by our own ego, pretensions, that you would like to keep an image in the society, that you are a good husband. This is outer." And he is saying, "This is inner. And when you fall in love with another woman, this nobody is forcing you, rather on the contrary, everybody is preventing you. That is inner. But the society has confused you completely. It has made you disoriented. Outer, it says, is the inner. It has deceived you completely. Inner, it says, is the outer. You go on a fast, and you think this is the inner voice. This is your religion, your scriptures, your priests. And then your inner says, you are hungry, eat. And you think this is outer. The devil is tempting you. What foolishness. The priest has tempted you for fast. Devil is not there. The priests are the only devilish forces in the world. Hunger comes, this is inner, the whole body, every cell of it says eat, and you say this is outer, somebody is tempting me, some devil forces, some evil, or this is desire, this is the body, and the body is the enemy, and my soul is on a fast, soul on a fast. The soul never needs any food. So how it can go on a fast? You are forcing poor body. But there is a natural fast also. It happens in animals. No preacher is there no priest teaching them. But it happens, if you observe a dog, if he is not feeling well, he will not eat. This is the inner. A dog's fast is inner. What absurdity! And a man's fast is almost always outer. Only a dog can fast inwardly, because he is still in contact with nature. You are not. When the body is ill, no animal can be forced to eat. If you force to eat, he will vomit. This is beautiful. The body doesn't need. It is ill. The whole energy is needed for the body to cure itself. And the energy will be diverted if you take food, because then the energy is needed to digest food. It will be a burden. The body is not in a good condition. The whole energy is needed for the body to cure itself. If food is thrown in the body, that will be a division. The whole energy will not move towards curing. It will be prevented. First, the food has to be digested. If in your illness you simply listen in words and don't eat, that's beautiful. Sometimes you don't feel hungry, then don't eat. But don't take a vow that I will fast for a few days, because who knows, in the evening you may feel hungry. Move with nature. When nature wants you to fast, fast. When nature wants you to eat, eat. The inner has to be found, because the society has completely confused you. What is inner and what is outer? There is a vast confusion. And almost always, whatsoever you think is the outer is possible to be the inner. And whatsoever you think the inner is bound to be the outer, because priests have done that. Priests are the destructive forces. To me, there is only one religion, and that religion is to find the inner voice, the inner guide. And the person who helps you to find your inner guide is the master. He helps you not to give you an outer discipline. He simply helps you to find the inner harmony which gives a discipline. And that discipline has a grace, because it is not forced. And that discipline has a beauty of its own, because it is always fresh. And with that discipline, you cannot go astray, because you cannot revolt with that discipline. It is you, your very innermost core. And the same is happening on a vaster scale in the whole cosmos. The phases of fire are craving and satiety. And the fire has two phases: craving, when you are hungry. Hindus call it Jatragni, the fire of hunger. Your stomach really feels fiery when you are hungry. If you are really hungry, because you are in such a bad shape, you don't know when you are hungry and you are not. Every day you take your food at 1 o'clock in the, then at 1 o'clock every day hunger comes. That hunger is psychological. Then you will not feel fire in the stomach. That is just because of the clock. The clock says it is 1 o'clock, then the mind says now the time has come for to be hungry. Immediately you feel a hunger. This is a projection. This is a false hunger. And if you wait for half an hour, it will disappear automatically. How a real hunger can disappear so easily? The real hunger will grow more and more. The fire will become more and more fiery in the stomach. You will start feeling pain in the stomach. a burning sensation all over the body. You will feel feverish. The body needs satiety. The body is demanding. Energy is needed. But if it is a false hunger, it will disappear. When the clock has moved to 2 o'clock, the hunger disappears. Watch, feel really hungry and then eat. Watch, feel really sleepy and then sleep. It will take few months to settle, because the whole civilization, culture, society, education, they have all helped to push you from the right path. The right path is always natural, the logos. The phases of fire are craving and satiety. These are the two phases of fire, the inner biofire, the bioenergy. You feel hungry, you eat, you feel satisfied. That satisfaction is also a phase of fire. The fire has subsided. Now there are no flames. It has disappeared. It is a prelay, a decreation, an involution. Then again comes the phase. The circle moves, the wheel moves. Again comes the phase of hunger, again satiety. You feel sexual lust, then satiety. You feel love and satiety. You cannot love 24 hours. Because the fire has two phases, and husbands and wives try to do the impossible. They want to love each other 24 hours, then everything goes astray. You cannot, because you cannot eat 24 hours. Love is food. Can you eat 24 hours? You have to give gaps so that the food is absorbed, the energy used, the body becomes hungry again. How can you love 24 hours? And if you try the impossible, you will be in a bad shape. The more you will force, the more everything will become false. That's why husbands and wives lose the whole beauty of love. Everything becomes false and forced. When they were lovers, everything was beautiful, because sometimes they will meet and there will be hunger and it will need satiety, and sometimes they will have to wait for the day to pass, and then the lover will be coming and there will be hunger. And when there is deep hunger, love satisfies deeply. When husbands and wives cling together 24 hours around each other like shadows, then there is no hunger. Of course, then there is no satiety. Then the whole beauty disappears. Remember this. If you love a person, leave the person to be alone also, so that the hunger arises. Otherwise, the love will be according to the clock. One has to. One day Mullah Nasruddin came home and found his greatest friend kissing his wife. He said, "What? I cannot believe my eyes. I have to, but why you?" A husband cannot believe, because love becomes a duty. When love becomes a duty, it is already dead. Then it is an outer enforcement. Then the inner thing is lost. When love is a hunger, not a duty, then it has a satiety phase. When love is satisfied, you feel absolutely blissful. Everything is okay. You can bless the whole existence and be blessed by it. Everything is simply wonderful. But it has to be through hunger. Heraclitus is saying that man is a miniature of the whole cosmos, and the same is true with the whole. The whole passes also with two phases. When the whole is in hunger, then there is much activity and creation. Things grow, manifestation comes in, trees flower, people love, children are born. Everything is a dynamic activity. Then satisfied, the existence moves into a satiety phase. Everything disappears. No trees, no earth, no stars, no sun. The fire is resting. The sun is new each day. And this is one of the most penetrating maxims of Heraclitus. The sun is new each day. The hunger is new each day. The love is new each day. The life is new each day. To say each day is not good. Each movement, each gesture, each moment, everything is new. From where the old comes then why you get bored? If everything is so new and you cannot step in the same river twice and you cannot see the same sunrise again, if everything is so new and fresh, then why you become dead and bored? Because you don't live out of the inner harmony. You live out of the mind. Mind is old. Each sun is new. Each morning is new. Each hunger is new. Each satiety. But the mind is old. Mind is past. Mind is the accumulated memory. And if you look through the mind, it gives a deadness and oldness to everything. Then everything looks dusty, dirty. It is because of the mind. Put aside the mind. Put aside memories. If you can put aside memories, your wife is new every day. Because it is only because of memories that you think you have lived with this woman 30 years. And you know her well. Who knows? Nobody ever knows. We remain strangers. Strangers eternally. How can you know a person? A thing can be known, not a person. Because a thing can be exhausted. And now scientists say even things cannot be known, because they also cannot be exhausted. How you can know a person? A person is freedom. Each movement he changes. If you cannot step twice in a river, how can you encounter the same person again? Even if rivers are so changing, the consciousness, the stream of consciousness, cannot be old. If you put aside the mind, if you don't look from the old eyes, then your wife is new, every gesture is new. Then there is a constant, a continuous excitement in your life, a continuous aliveness. This day you will feel hungry, that hunger is new. And this day again when you eat food, that food is new. Because nothing can be old in existence. Existence has no past. Past is part of the mind. Existence is always in the present, new, fresh, always moving, a dynamic force, a dialectical movement, river-like, it flows. If this insight happens to you, then you will never be bored. And boredom is the greatest disease that kills deeply. It is a slow poisoning. By and by you are so bored that you become a dead weight on yourself. then the whole poetry of life disappears. Then no flowers flower and no birds sing. Then you are already entombed. You have entered your grave. It is said that people die near about 30 and are buried near about 70. 32 seems too long. This proverb must be from the very ancient days. Now that's not true. Near about 20. Or even that seems to be too late. Young people come to me, young, just 18, 20, and they say, we feel bored. They have become old already. You have taught them. You have conditioned their mind already. Already they are dying. Before being young, they are dying. Remember, youth is a quality of being. If you can look at the world without the mind, you will remain young forever and ever. Even in your death, you will be young. Excited that the death is approaching. Excited very much. A great adventure, a culmination, a door opens now to the infinity. Hunger has passed, now comes satiety. Now you are moving into rest. Now you will be a seed, and the seed will rest and sleep for many, many years. And then again, you will sprout. Again you will open eyes, but it is never the same. Everything goes on changing. Only mind is old and dead. To be capable to look at life without mind is meditation. Enough for today.